Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Is Tech News Today for Thursday, August 18th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by NewTek, makers of the new TriCaster 850. Find out more by visiting newtek.com or watching the amazing transitions on this show. And like Money Wipe. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell. I wish I had preparation for that.
I know. I didn't give you enough heads up. This is a show we kick around HP buying or getting rid of its PC business today. That's wow. You know, August is a dead zone for news mostly.
Except for this week.
But then when news happens, it just really happens, right? So, well,
last week we got Motorugel. That was Monday, right?
That was Monday.
Okay, that was
and
this week.
Then we had a vast dead zone until today when HP announced that it is, in fact, seeking strategic alternatives for its personal systems group. Can you guys believe that?
That sounds like it's not that big a deal, but that's actually pretty huge.
Yeah,
personal systems group isn't something small.
Strategic alternatives is code for we want to sell some stuff. So they could split it up into a bunch of different things. They could sell it off to one person. They could spin it off as its own company. Personal systems group is the computer part of the business. They do more than just that, but the desktops, the laptops, and WebOS.
So they're going to be like IBM now? So HP will not be doing any more consumer electronics? We're not going to be seeing any...
They still do printers.
They'll be doing printers, okay.
The printers is a different division, and that's staying.
But laptops, they're going to be just basically be in the enterprise world, because they're also picking up a company called Autonomy, which does... What does Autonomy do?
Autonomy is a company that does enterprise-level structured and unstructured database searching and data mining.
Yeah.
So it's good, in other words, good enterprise stuff. That's going to help HP in becoming a solutions provider. HP essentially going IBM here, saying, you know what? We want to sell off our ThinkPad division, our Lenovo. We need to find somebody to take that. And we're going to focus on being an enterprise company and doing our stuff in the cloud.
Well, the big difference, though, when IBM did it, their ThinkPads were still pretty successful and laptops weren't like what they are now. I mean, like every laptop now is...
It's not that much of a difference. Actually, the HP laptops and desktops are very successful. HP's the top seller.
I don't know. I mean, this is a changing market right now in the PC space.
We just talked yesterday about how HP's website is like the number two retail website.
And there are certain theories on that, too.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't get that way by being, you know, a bad business. The problem is the margins are so thin. So for a company as big as HP, they're making $500 million on the personal systems group. That is not bad. But it is the lowest earnings of any of their divisions.
That's not the only news. WebOS, they're killing it. They just bought it from Palm, so they could just kill it. They're not going to be supporting the touchpad anymore. Not supporting. They're not going to be developing the touchpad
anymore.
They didn't
buy it to kill it.
Here's what they said. They will discontinue operations for WebOS devices, specifically the touchpad and WebOS phones. HP will continue to explore options to optimize the value of WebOS software going forward. In fact, Josh Topolsky over at This Is My Next has a source from inside HP saying that they just had an all-hands meeting. And in the meeting, WebOS GBU VP Stephen DeWitt made it clear that HP intends to continue to work on WebOS and likely intends to license it.
To whom?
I guess to manufacturers.
Yeah.
There was a direct question about licensing it to HT or Samsung, and VP Todd Bradley pointed out that to date, WebOS is designed to work on a single set of silicon, Qualcomm, and that many potential licensees would likely want to see WebOS support other chipsets, but he didn't elaborate on potential partners. So part of that licensing may be, you know what? We just need to make it work on other chipsets, and then we'll give it out to other people. But we don't know who those people are right now because it only executes on Qualcomm for now.
HTC and Samsung are always the usual suspects because right now they support like every operating system. So why not one more? They want to have the biggest.
Nokia is not going to take WebOS.
No, probably not. Nokia's decided.
RIM's not going to take WebOS.
Maybe. They tried QNX. Why not go ahead and use something that works with web standards?
I guess it's a small possibility. Apple's not going to take WebOS.
I could see Apple trying to get the patents for
some
of this
LG?
Stuff.
What about LG?
LG, we've talked about it a long time ago. I don't know why LG wouldn't do it, because they've wanted to compete with Samsung for so long, and Samsung has its own operating system and LG doesn't. So this would be a nice little play for that. But I still think the patents for Apple is actually where this should be, because they have some really interesting patents on notification systems. And even with the new iOS 5 coming out, that notification system is a little bit better, but they could have a lock on that by buying up some of this webOS stuff.
I do think that this idea of, you know, we're looking for ways to exploit webOS. At first, I thought that means they're going to sell it separately from the personal systems group to somebody for parts. You know, somebody's going to buy it for patents. But this Josh Topolsky leak, if this is on the up and up, which I believe it must be, implies that, no, they want to keep working on webOS. They just think it's been a failure, and they want to change their tune on it. Here's a couple of quotes from Leo Apotheker in their earnings call today. He said, webOS would require significant investments over the next 5 years, generating risk without clear rewards. Well, that makes it sound like they're selling it for parts, like nobody would want this. Later on, in answer to a question, he said, regarding the future of webOS, we are looking at all of our strategic options regarding the software. The software has been received very well. Everyone likes it. We will be looking at all possible business models, from licensing to any other possibility, to look at how to extract value from webOS.
Now, do you think they're going to just continue developing WebOS just so they can support it for the years to come? Because they just put out the touchpad. They cut the prices fairly recently. There's going to be a bunch of people out there who have bought these devices and hoping there's support in the background. Is that why they're keeping WebOS around in any which way?
I think the reason they're keeping WebOS around is that anybody who would want to buy the personal systems group wants to buy a personal systems group that can make tablets. And they want to show, hey, we're in that game. We may not be very far into it, but but we at least have the ability to do it. Because that's you know, mobile systems is the big growth opportunity. Desktops and PCs are not. So this is the sweetener in the deal.
It just seems like a gamble for any company to go to WebOS when Android is available and free, and that has such penetration and app development. It seems like it'd take a lot of work to take WebOS and do something.
Well, nobody's going to buy just WebOS unless they want the patents. I agree with you there. But somebody might be willing to buy the desktop and laptop division of HP, which is high selling, very well liked. You know, I mean, they've had their problems out there for sure, but they sell high volumes, and say, you know, we can increase the margins on this. Lenovo just had their earnings, and their earnings were $108.8 million of net profit. That's compared to $500 million from the personal systems group of HP. So HP's five times as profitable as Lenovo, but Lenovo is surging. For the quarter ending in June, 98% increase in their sales. So for a small company, that $500 million is very attractive. If you're like, this is all I'm going to do, I'm going to cut costs, I'm going to lay off some people, I'm going to get very cost conscious. I don't have to support HP Labs. I don't have to support all of this other behemoth of a worldwide enterprise. I'm just going to make consumer devices. I want to buy this desktop and laptop business, and the fact that it has WebOS, and I think I can make something out of it and sell some phones and tablets, that could be worthwhile to somebody.
Do you think we're looking at another Lenovo situation with just a giant OEM buying HP's PC business and then making a name based on that? Or do we think that it's going to be bought up by some other pre-existing company like a Dell or somebody crazy to say, okay, look, we're going to buy at this competition right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think Google buys it. No, I'm just kidding.
More hardware for Google.
I think Motorola is spun out of Google and then merges with a spun out personal systems group.
And Motorola will only run WebOS.
Actually, I do. I think probably right now, given what I know, the highest percentage chance is that HP spins out the personal systems group the way Motorola Mobility and Motorola Solutions separated,
right,
and it becomes its own company for a while. And maybe somebody comes along, like Google did with Motorola Mobility, and snaps it up later.
It could be like even ZTE. They make cell phones in China, I think. And this could be a good time to get, if you wanted to get into the U.S. market, this is a very established brand. I'm sure they'll be able to use the name for a while.
Somebody might be able to make an entry into the U.S.
like
market.
Lenovo. I mean, like, nobody would be like, oh, yeah, what's the Lenovo ThinkPad? Slowly but surely, people are like, yeah, Lenovo ThinkPads are great.
Captain Kipper reminded me, Paul Thurrott on Windows Weekly said, maybe they'll just spin it out and call it Compaq.
Yeah, I heard
and
that joke
all
day. And
then they'll headquarter it in Texas. And it'll just bring back Compaq. And that brought a little tear to my eye. I had a Compaq desktop. I loved it. It was a good little buddy. Started with some brilliant.com on it.
So you're rooting for this Compaq renewal?
No love from either of you.
I just never had one.
HP. I get it. If I had one, I'd probably feel more nostalgic for old Compaq. HP made Compaq their budget horrible line. So, I mean, the nostalgia is, they've crushed it.
I'm going to move us on to an IBM story.
IBM, you say?
Yes. So, IBM.
Speaking of old.
With their not only solutions, yeah. They're older. They make me feel young. They of course, not only do solutions and cloudy stuff, but they also have IBM Research Division, which brings you things like Watson playing on Jeopardy. The latest development they have is a DARPA project. Those are the folks who brought you the internet. Called Synapse, Systems of Neuromorphic Adaptive Plastic Scalable Electronics. What the hell does that mean? It is a prototype, actually two prototypes, of a neurosynaptic computing chip. These chips have 256 cores, and they each have varying numbers of programmable synapses. So the way a regular computer works, all of its gates are soldered down. You can't change them. The way our brain works, though, we can change pathways on the fly. That's how we create new memories. At least that's what a lot of neuroscientists think. And this programmable system can't, you know, solder new connections as it goes, but it can through a voltage, a memory, so to speak. This is very analogous. We're not talking accurately here, but just relatively speaking, through hammering the voltage, they can actually simulate. They can virtualize the ability to create new pathways in the chips. They integrate memory directly within the processors, wedding hardware with software in a design that resembles the brain's cognitive structure, which limits the data transfer speeds, but it allows for parallel processing, multiple processes in parallel, the way the brain works.
Yeah, I mean, some of the things that in these videos they discuss, IBM discusses, is that what a brain can do, it's so low powered, it's like 1 watt for a particular, they were using a bird as an example, when it had to fly through a very narrow, pathway. To actually move its wings and to do what it has to do is so low wattage, and it's actually so slow in a clock speed compared to a processor. But it can handle so much more processing at the same time because it's parallel. This is the kind of stuff they want to use eventually in the long term for something. The example they said was an airplane traveling 1,000 miles an hour in a 10-foot hangar, which is obviously not physically possible at this point. But that kind of precise movement.
It's like you give up speed for precision.
Mm-hmm. So this idea of you're running all these parallel processes, and the idea of like how the human brain works, you're walking down a sidewalk just processing light and turning it into all kinds of information. To do that in a computer, they're saying 20 years from now, you'll probably see something like this in a device for us. But DARPA and like military applications probably, you know, the next 10 to 15 years.
And they have tested it. There's some tests. This is not just theoretical stuff. Prototypes have already demonstrated the ability to navigate, recognize patterns, and classify objects. So the stuff works. They're just trying to make it, A, not use as much power. They want to make a smaller, low-power, more efficient version of it. And they want it to be able to, you know, fly planes at 1,000 miles an hour through barn doors.
Well, I could imagine this in a car. Like, if you can identify, okay, that's a person, that's a speed bump, there's a big difference right there. If you can actually make this decision, and it could be low-powered, it could be even be a very cheap device.
Well, cars can already do that.
Right, but I'm saying this is a different kind of processing.
But it would be cheaper and easier for the car to do that.
Exactly. That's what this technology could do in the long run. But it couldn't, not just even cars. If this becomes low-powered enough, it could be an aid to the blind, actually, if I think about it with this. Because it could be low-powered. You probably could use ambient energy. We did discuss a circuit that did that. So this actually could be... has some really interesting long-range effects.
Anything, I mean, all of these things you're talking about, you can do with regular chips right now. But what this does is says we can do more complex versions of that easier. We don't have to do so much on the back end to simulate the way the brain works. It'd be more natural, it seems like. On the more from the sublime to the mundane, AT&T has leaked a document, and Gadget has it, showing they plan on changing their text message plans August 21st, eliminating all the limited plans. So right now you can pay like $10 for 5,000 text messages or something like that. I can't remember exactly. But it doesn't matter because they're getting rid of all that. Starting August 21st, if you sign up for a new AT&T plan, you got two choices. $20 for an unlimited plan or nothing. And you just get charged the per text rate, which, by the way, is a usurious 20 cents per text or 30 cents for a multimedia message.
Well, as somebody who is trying to get off texting in general and use...
Just texting.
Right.
Not a particular type of texting.
Well, SMS.
Okay.
And just go through a data plan. I would probably, I mean, I'm not using AT&T anymore, but I was an AT&T customer for a long time using limited plans because I was like, I don't need unlimited because right. I can curtail I know my workarounds.
Not a teenager anymore.
So this would really tick me off, except that I think I might actually go no plan at all and then just start saying, do not text me to my friends. Get a hold of me through Facebook Messenger, for example, or group me or variety of other ways that you can ping me.
And maybe this
just
is
don't
what
text
we need
me.
To encourage the one non-SMS standard for interphone communications.
Yeah, I wonder if AT&T is doing this because they know eventually everyone's going to move over anyway, so they might as well just get some more money out of unlimited plans. I don't know.
They're just trying to move everyone to an unlimited plan and make a lot of
and
money.
And make it, well, yeah. make money and simplify it for themselves.
There is a $30 family plan, by the way. If you're on a family plan, you can keep an unlimited message plan. It just costs you $10 more. It's just usurious. Both of these, the unlimited plan and the 20 cents per text, it's ridiculous. Well,
because sending texts are still using a technology that they have to use anyway. It's to ping the phone. So they found out they could put 140 characters, 160 characters over. Anytime, like this is a free service. It could be free if they wanted it to be.
Casey Johnston at Ars Technica did the math. A single 140 byte message costs 0.0002 cents. Not 2 cents, 0.0002 cents. Meaning customers would have to send 11 million text messages a month to make up the $20 texting plan.
Well, I mean, I could just see somebody taking the $20 plan and trying that out.
Yeah.
Just go for it. Just try. Let's push. Let's see if unlimited is truly unlimited with this. That's the other thing. I'm kind of curious. Like, can you actually flood this? Can you irritate AT&T to the point where they're like, you're cut off?
Not enough people would go through the trouble to do that.
We set up an application
for it to
do
upset
it.
Them too much.
Now, granted, if I don't have a smartphone, I'm kind of stuck. I have to use SMS because mm-hmm. I'm limited on apps,
that's
right?
That's true.
But if you're on a smartphone, at this point, I'd say maybe you should just do Google Plus or Google Voice.
Mm-hmm.
And send all of your, and just give that out as your texting number. And take all
if
of your,
it's available in your area.
Text through there. Well, it doesn't matter if it's available. You can have our phone numbers in Butler, Indiana for this true. Show. And we are not. We're incorporated in Delaware. This is like our show is everywhere. We exist in so many different areas. It's amazing. Shall we move on to Microsoft?
That's a good idea.
Sure.
Microsoft starts to talk Windows 8 some more. Steven Sinofsky posting again to the Builders blog, the B8 blog, about how the Windows 8 team is organized. Now, Sinofsky is known for being very careful about his words. So, of course, everyone's parsing this very closely. He is posting all of the different organizations under the Windows 8 team by what they do. So he mentioned an App Store team. Well, that pretty much confirms what everyone suspected, that Microsoft is going to have an App Store in Windows 8.
I mean, that's not too surprising. We've seen previews about this, and it seems like it's going to be there. The only question really was,
this is the first official word.
Will it be called App Store? And I think Amazon actually fought off Apple for App Store, so it's a possibility Microsoft will call their App Store App Store.
Now you're really parsing it because he calls it the App Store team. Maybe they would call it an App Store. Or maybe
they've been fighting that trademark for a long
Windows
time.
Windows comes up with really weird names sometimes, though.
But App Store isn't too weird.
App Store, that was Amazon's argument, is like it's generic enough so that Apple shouldn't have a problem with it because that's what it is.
I think they'll call it the Microsoft Software Resource Center.
This would be more of a rival for the Mac OS X store rather than any sort of mobile app
right.
store.
Right. Well, no, this is for Windows 8, right?
Yeah.
So this is on your desktop. They also mentioned there's a Hyper-V team, which got a lot of people excited. Hyper-V is the virtualization technology in Windows Server, and the fact that it's listed under the Windows 8 team made people say, hey, are we going to get Hyper-V in the regular desktop version of Windows 8?
So instead of having this whole problem of, is this going to work with compatibility mode? This used to work on Windows 95. Will it work? You can just virtualize.
Yeah, because it's Hyper-V is a virtualization engine, so that's one use it could be put to. Absolutely. And it could do all kinds of other stuff, too. No mention of a media center team. There was a media center team for Windows 7. There is not for Windows 8. This doesn't mean they got rid of them. They could be just folded into somebody else, but it's definitely deprioritized.
Yeah, I would think. I mean, Media Center was I'm like the only Media Center fan I think I know offhand. And
you're the only one at this table.
Yeah, I like Media Center. Anyway, the thing about it was they tried.
Fanboy.
Microsoft tried it. I am a fanboy of Media Center. Microsoft tried it.
Eating the
it
dog food.
Didn't work very well. And I bet it would be integrated into either their Windows Media Player. Because it was a lot of overlap anyway, just to have a 10-foot interface and all the tiles that they're using. It's very Media Center anyway. So the fact that Media Center isn't broken out anymore versus the Tile interface, which is similar, that's not surprising. I mean, I would assume it's still going to have the same multimedia capabilities.
Separately, Wind Rumors reporting that an internal email allegedly from Intel announced that generic product keys previously included with, you know, service release, pre-release builds of Windows would no longer be supported in Windows 8 pre-releases. Instead, people working with the new build would have to obtain new special product keys. So they'd be locking down Windows 8.
Yeah, but to what end? I mean, if they want people to test it, why would they care how many people get it?
My guess is if they want to restrict a certain release to developers and not have it be a public beta, that they would do this.
So you think this is only limited to the pre-release to the actual developers?
The Windows 8 developer preview.
Once it goes to the actual public beta, that probably won't be the case.
Maybe, maybe not. Or maybe they want to track all these things more strictly. I don't know why they would go to the trouble, to be honest, but they apparently are, at least according to this leaked email. It doesn't make any sense to me, though. Like, so a few people who are really motivated to use your product, go out and get a hold of the pre-release and play around with it.
Well, does Microsoft charge its developers anything per year to be a member of that?
And so, and yes.
So if a developer is just seeding out copies, they might be like, hey, you know what? You owe us money.
Yeah,
we
maybe
see that
that's
your
it.
Code is everywhere.
This doesn't really undermine the motivations for people to become a Windows developer, though. But, okay,
I'm just trying to figure out what they're doing.
That could be one of the justifications for it.
I say it was good logic.
Let's finish up with a patent story that is not part of the patent wars.
Oh, okay.
This is, in fact,
a happy patent story?
Well, a happy patent story.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay.
The United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit has rejected a patent on a method of detecting credit card fraud. The court ruled that you cannot patent mental processes. Actually, that's a given, and they say that this qualifies under that, even if they are carried out by a computer program. Well, that's the new part. So you can't patent a mental process. The fact that I'm just thinking something is not patentable. However, there have been cases in the past where if something could be done on a computer, that was a distinguishing factor. They say no. If it's a mental process, even if you put it on a computer, it's still a mental process, so you can't patent that. However, the court also ruled that there is a rule against not patenting math, but that doesn't apply. They just kind of went out and said, you know, in case you're wondering about this, we don't mean that you can't ever patent math. No patenting math doesn't apply if the math in question is complicated enough that, quote, as a practical matter, the use of a computer is required to perform the calculations. Now, in 1994, a federal circuit in a case called In Re Allopat allowed a patent on anti-aliasing. Tim Lee over at Ars Technica points out, but wait a minute. You could execute that anti-aliasing. It would be tedious, but you could execute it on pen and paper. So isn't that a mental process that even though it's carried out by a computer program, doesn't need a computer? You read the decision here.
So I sat so and I read the whole thing.
Make some sense out of this.
Okay, I see what Tim was arguing here, the idea that it could be tedious. But I think in this particular case, in what is this, cyber, what are they called? I forget their names already. CyberSource versus Retail Decisions. In this particular case, and not Allopat, the patent was so broad, and it was the example they had in their claims was it's about matching IP addresses to the location to determine credit card fraud. In their example, they used four IP addresses and location variables, which makes it look really easy. And actually, it is pretty easy. You can figure out, okay, for credit card fraud, if all these payments were happening in this particular area, and this is the IP address, well, if it's all the way on the other side of the world, maybe something's up.
That seems like you could just kick it out on that. Like, wait a minute.
That was part of it.
You know, but the judge went farther than that.
Yeah, the judge went through every single claim and basically called this you're trying to patent an idea. And if I know this doesn't sound like it's true, but you can't patent an idea. You can only patent a process.
That's a legal definition of idea.
That's right.
Right. So that confuses people.
There's a method of process that you could do for something like this, but the method of process in this case was something you could do in your own head effectively. What was the phrase they used? Let me try to get this for you guys. You can't patent abstract ideas. They're calling this, the court was calling this an abstract idea. So this was so broad. Actually, the real question is whether this will go up to the Supreme Court. If their lawyer wrote up all their other patents the same way, as broad, like, they do not want to appeal this. They do not want to get all their patents invalidated.
Well, right. In fact, Tim Lee at Ars Technica says that the Supreme Court not taking cases like in re app, what was it again? In re
Allopat.
Allopat?
Yep.
Almost said apparat. That would be a party member of the Communist Party. In re Allopat. Because the Supreme Court didn't hear that, it actually ended up kind of trumping some previous decisions from the 70s and causing some confusion. So the fact that the Supreme Court has now, in the past couple of years, seemed more friendly to taking on patent cases, this might be a good candidate for the Supreme Court to look at and say, well, wait a minute, where is the line between something I can do in my head and something a computer could do? Because this case does not make it clear to me.
I think in the case they actually use something in language, if you can do it on pen and paper or pencil and paper.
But as Tim points out, you could do almost any
That's
computer
the kind
program
of challenge
on pen and
the
paper.
The Supreme Court might want to take a look at. They
exactly.
would say, what does that mean? Or should we, if we're going to even look at this, either they would approve, if the Supreme Court chooses to even look at it, that's the first question, will they? They could say no. And then this case
well, yeah,
stays away.
That, right.
But the thing is, if they go and review this, they might tear that apart. What do they mean by pen and paper? They want to actually explain that. They can actually provide guidelines. So it would be a good candidate, possibly. I mean, Tim Lee's got some great ideas of why this would be the case the Supreme Court takes a look at.
Yeah, that's the thing that you were explaining to me is like this is a fantastic case to kind of resolve a lot of these
right.
issues we've been dealing with. But the people who lost here may not be willing to appeal.
Right, that's the thing. This could hurt them in the long run. So they might not even appeal. So we might even see this go up.
All right. Well, anyway, I kind of hope it does go. I'm cheering for it. Go ahead and appeal. You'll win. On to the news fuse. I wanted to keep playing. yes, everybody's acquisition crazy these days, including Evernote. The company just picked up Sketch, a drawing app for OS X. Sketch used to have a $20 price tag. Not anymore. Evernote has made it freeware. Considering Evernote is cross-platform, expect Sketch drawing tools to be integrated into mobile and desktop versions of Evernote soon.
I love this.
I know.
Makes Evernote
cool.
much better. Sketch comes in handy. Anybody who hasn't used it before.
Evernote.
It does come in handy. Thanks, Evernote, for making it freeware. Speaking of free stuff, the CEO of Sledgehammer Games, the current developers of Call of Duty games, announced via Twitter that Modern Warfare 3 will get free dedicated servers. Hooray! That means anybody can run their own server. That also means expect all kinds of exploits and cheats.
Yeah,
Modern Warfare 3.
With great freedom comes great responsibility
and great cheating. It's available on Steam. Modern Warfare 3 is, in case you had an itch to download a war game.
Is that what that is?
Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
A Battlefield 3. The PS3 got a price cut, but there's another reason it got more attractive. For a fee, a quite large fee, PS3 owners will be able to watch NFL Sunday Ticket via the PS3 without needing a satellite or cable subscription. I mean, obviously you need an ISP. The package costs around $340 and gives viewers access to out-of-market games in HD. So if you wanted to cut cable but couldn't because of live sports, here's your chance. The PS3 also has access to the MLB, NHL, and a whole bunch of things like Hulu Plus and Netflix.
So I don't have to have DirecTV or Comcast or anything
nope,
for this.
Not an authentication thing. You pay them $340.
Yeah, I just have to get a PS3 so I can watch football.
Just got a price
I also
cut
have to like football for this to work.
All right.
Yes.
Everyone likes football.
To the rumor mill.
Oops.
That's not the rumor mill.
Dang it. It was
our
rumored to be.
Wars, you
our
were able to get
brain.
It.
It really, really missed out earlier. It wanted to be talked about.
The Nexus Prime is rumored to be available to all starting in October. This would be the third generation of Nexus phones, and it would ship with Android 4.0, a.k.a. ice cream sandwich.
Yum, yum,
Nobody
yum.
Nobody brought me a plate of ice cream sandwiches this time. Why would anyone wait until October for this phone, Jason? Well, maybe it's 4.50-inch 720p HD AMOLED display and 1.5 gigahertz dual-core processor would be why you wait.
Never going to buy a phone.
Ever. Well, we'll see. I might have this one. I might also have like five other ones. Maybe I won't buy one phone. Maybe I'll buy them all.
You can wear them in a sash like Chewbacca.
Right.
You'll just become the phone man. Just Velcro them to you. That's his thing. There have been rumors about the iPhone entering China circulating, but now it looks like it's not going to happen. China Mobile says it's had several in-person meetings with one and only Steve Jobs to bring an iPhone to its network. The iPhone could work on China Mobile's 2G network, but would require a redesign to work on China Mobile's 3G network.
So maybe iPhone redesign for China.
Looks like it is going to happen. Pardon my...
French.
Right. Pardon my Chinese.
She was speaking in French.
Because it worked Chinese so well for Nokia, RIM is reportedly talking to the music industry to introduce a music service. The RIM music service would run on top of BlackBerry Messenger somehow. And according to CNET, RIM has already signed one of the big four and is close to landing two others. When can you expect this to launch? Testing could begin as soon as a few weeks.
I can see the press release now. RIM comes out and says, hey, everybody, we've got our music. Sir, where'd everybody go?
Playbook.
Guys?
Active Wikimedia editors in good standing are voting on a referendum deciding whether to implement a system for readers to conceal pictures that they would prefer not to view via their preference settings. So dirty pictures, disturbing pictures, you could just make them all disappear. Under the referendum proposal, potentially upsetting pictures would not be deleted, just shuttered. Violent and sexual images could be shuttered by any user. Other controversial images would require registration to disappear.
So people use Google Maps to figure out how to get to places, obviously. Now you can use it to figure out what to wear to the destination as well. Google has added a weather layer accessible from the upper right corner of Google Maps that lets users get current weather conditions and five-day forecasts for locales all around the globe. Users can zoom in or click on a weather icon to get more of a detailed report for a specific area. You know, I'm going to be going to Las Vegas tomorrow, and now I know it'll be a cool 108.
Lovely.
Oh, so you'll wear a parka. It's not humid?
Yeah, at least it's a dry heat. That means it's going to be really comfortable.
Enjoy.
Thank
you. The BART Police Officers Association website has been hacked. Not too surprising considering the go-rounds BART has had with the group Anonymous. SF Weekly reports that the hack was perpetrated by a French woman who goes by Lameline_5MG. Reportedly, she figured out how to get into BART's website by a one-page PDF tutorial and was Googling, quote, site: BARTPOA.com in URL. colon ASP. Info on
ASP.
ASP. Info on 102 police officers were released.
Yes.
A tutorial, obviously.
Boy. Hacker fun. On to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
New words have been added to the concise Oxford English Dictionary, and one of those words is its own celebration. Woot.
Woot.
Is it woot with an exclamation point?
No, they spelled it wrong.
Does it have zeros in it?
It has O's.
But is
zeros.
It? But is it woot exclamation?
No.
Or just it's W
zero? No zeros, no exclamation point.
That is not a real word, Oxford.
Does it refer to the...
I like that your problem is not that they added woot to the dictionary, it's that they didn't spell it right.
They didn't spell it the way you would spell woot.
But it doesn't refer to the website?
I have a problem with that.
Boop. Is it defined as that? As a once an ideal thing?
No. No, it's the generic term.
And people are excited about this.
You don't add brand names to the dictionary, IS.
You don't.
No. You know this.
Right. So we're excited
also
about...
Also, retweet, cyberbullying, and then some other non-technical words like denialist, gastric band, mankini, and jeggings.
Did hashtag make it this year?
You know, what makes me... And I don't know if hashtag's in there or not, but what makes me it makes me laugh is I posted this up on Google Plus and a bunch of people are like, this is stupid. Oh, I can't believe they put it in the dictionary. I'm like, the dictionary is a collection of words people use.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with putting woot in there if a bunch of people are using it? That way, if I see it and I'm like, what the hell does that mean? I go to the dictionary, I get a definition. Isn't that what a dictionary is supposed to do?
Yeah, that's what the dictionary does. I don't know why people are excited to see it in the dictionary, though.
It's more like they're upset to see it go in the dictionary. That's like once it gets in the Oxford Dictionary, now it's official somehow.
It's like now everybody's going to be using it.
The king has deemed it.
What does Merriam-Webster think about this?
I don't know. I don't know if Merriam... And this isn't the complete OED, by the way. It's the concise OED. Makes a difference.
Woot.
On to the calendar. Cyberbullying.
Bling. HP. You know, that old Hewlett-Packard? Never heard of them. I'm going to tell you a little bit of something about them. They were incorporated on this day in 1947, IS, which was 8 whole years after the company started in just a little garage.
So the anniversary, they just broke the company way the heck up.
That's right. Okay. Exactly.
Well, I mean, yeah, they're just pursuing,
right. They're pursuing
strategic
alternatives to running HP the way it was.
Got right.
Strategic alternatives like offering the HP TouchPad 64 gigabyte model in France.
Hey, get it while you can.
With a dual core 1.5 gigahertz Snapdragon processor, a white finish, and a 600 euro price.
Now we know why it's so quietly launched.
That's right. French people, get your touchpad. Nokia has released a major software update to Symbian today, so you can enjoy a revised UI, new keyboard in portrait mode, some other improvements as well.
Good to know.
Anonymous is planning yet another live BART protest. That's, of course, Bay Area Rapid Transit, Monday, August 22nd, at 5 p.m. If you will be commuting during that time, you might want to take this seriously.
And I think the rest of the world is going to be interested in whether they shut down the
exactly
anything.
If you're commuting, maybe not, you can email us and tell us if everything's working.
Most people in our audience probably aren't commuting. That's my guess.
Probably not, unless they are. Google gives itself until February 15th, 2013, for what, you might ask? To get that Motorola deal all wrapped up nice and tidy.
So this is the after which they would have to pay that $2.5 billion
reverse breakup fee. They've got a year and a half. Got some time.
Woo, twit.
What's that?
We got some swag, new swag.
Oh, that's really cool.
Microfiber. Leo called it a glasses cleaner on Windows Weekly, so I assume that's all you can use it for.
You can also use it to clean an iPad.
That's right.
Or a touchpad.
But he didn't say that.
Or a Zoom.
So I don't think you can use it for that. I don't think it's an approved
use. Or Galaxy Tab.
DRM.
Oh, you know what? Why don't you lighten up?
All right. Well, lighten up and read an email from Paul. Paul, thanks for emailing, along with the several other people who emailed the same theory. Listening to Wednesday's episode, I can shed some light on why HP is ranked so high in web visitors. Working in the tech industry, I'm always going to HP.com to get the printer drivers. I'm sure the tech support driver downloads account for most of those hits. I manage printers for an enterprise, and I go to HP's website easily 100-plus times a month, and we are relatively a small company. I don't know if ComScore, if that fits in the way ComScore surveys or not, but even if it's just, you know, ComScore doing a random sample, probably people are going there to look at drivers. And someone suggested in another email that maybe they have HP computers that have HP.com as a default.
Yeah, that wasn't the theory. That's what they do with their machines.
So well, the theory was that might.
Oh, that could be why. So you got that in printer drivers.
It certainly doesn't hurt.
Another email from Craig. In episode 305, and as other times as well, I'm sure, Sarah Lane, that's me, mentioned trying to move away from email. Yes, Craig, you're right. So my question is, what would you have it replaced with? You mentioned Facebook Messenger, but that's a closed system, not to mention the fact that you need to be logged in so they can track your every move. I don't have too much of the logged in issue with Facebook, Craig, but you're right. It is very difficult to move off of email entirely.
Especially with the cost of text messaging these days.
Exactly. What are you going to do? But yes, I actually do think that shorter messaging systems in an everyday use make a lot more sense to get a point across to each other than emails do. For example, my mom asked me yesterday via email while I was busy and at work about someone's address because she wanted to, I don't know, send something to an address that I have and she didn't. We're both logged into IM. She just needs to ask me and I can get the address and cut and paste back to her rather than going into my email and sort of composing more of... There's just something about email that I see that it's necessary, but I think it is abused with all the other tools we have now. Now, some people don't use all of those other tools. So I'm not saying it's wrong to use email. I'm just saying for most of my technically inclined friends, we don't need to have this long email thread about where the next barbecue is going to be. Let's just create a Facebook group or create a circle within Google+. It works better. It actually is more efficient for a lot of activities that email is still used for.
What about just not talking to some people anymore? Because if they only get to you by email, you just write them out of your life.
Well, but that's the thing is like I don't actually think that I could shut off email and not miss out on certain stuff because sure. I do have people in my life who they're only going to email me or call me and that's it. They're not going to use any of this other stuff.
But if they call, then you'll still answer
the phone. Then it will go to voicemail.
Yeah, because you don't answer the phone. All right. Let's thank our sponsor, New Tech, maker of the new TriCaster 850. Jason, do you have a demonstration of what the TriCaster 850 can do?
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot like that. Well, I'll just go ahead and choose this one transition. that's all I had here at a button press. Oh,
okay.
That's
like
not very
it. No,
impressive.
It's really nice.
Yeah, but see, I can do it really fast. See?
Well, one of the things, too, is that you can switch between people and
like
you don't have to change the CG at the same time as you switch.
Well, that's the more useful thing.
That
I can do that. It honestly saves me so much headache compared to the old version.
And it's a 24-channel system, so you're not sitting there like...
You know one thing that's really cool that it can do? that people might not know of. It takes a total of 8 camera inputs. You can set it so that it records each of those camera inputs independent of each other.
ISOs.
So even though I'm switching the show live, I could then go in and correct based on all of those 8 independent channels.
Or show
later,
us picking our nose when we thought we were off camera.
Yes, but I usually choose to leave that on there.
Yes, I know.
Okay.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah. You can use the TriCaster for desktop or portable production. Find out more at newtek.com, newtek.com. Also, big thanks to our Redditors at technewstoday.reddit.com. They're the folks who give us ideas for stories, and you can join them by submitting stories or voting things up and down. Thanks to Cletus, CompFixer87, SP Sheridan. I actually got to say his name right. PCGuy8088 and more. Gadget Geek Girl in there as well. TechNewsToday.reddit.com is the place to go. Bricks.twit.tv is another place to go if you'd like to have your name, your message, your name forever etched into the wall. I walk in and I see these bricks every day. Bricks.twit.tv is the place to go for that. Thanks, everybody, for watching this episode of Tech News Today. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. Email us, TNT at twit.tv, or give us a call. Our number is 260-TNT-SHOW. See you tomorrow.
Was a
headbanging.
That was a headbang injury. Yeah,
really.
It's been a while.